want to know about life on the road? It's
booze, tacos, angry dwarves, strippers waving guns,
and
bees, fights, candle flights, running with the runs,
and
blacklists, bounce checks, great, a bachelorette, drunks in the front, making out through your set,
and
middle acts doing blow more, missing merch,
and
drive the rental car past another mega church,
and
juice, keys, vagina, fist, your cell phone is gone, one big Law and Order marathon.
So, all right. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Hey, thanks for joining the Road Stories podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Murray Valeriano, part of the All Things Comedy Network, but we're back in the Mar Vista Studios.
Yay.
Yes, where it all began, Randy.
Snow-capped Mar Vista Studios, by the way.
Beautiful.
Stunning.
Beautiful mountains. We've had a ton of rain here, and the bridge, what are the what mountains are those?
I think San Gabriel's.
Yes.
San Gabriel Mountains.
Yeah, they're we took those mountains from people.
Uh-huh.
Some dude named Gabriel no longer has mountains. Somewhere he's crying with garbage at his feet, but that's how it goes. we had that conversation earlier.
But we let him keep the name. So
yes,
I mean, come on. We're not
exactly.
Savages. We're not savages.
It's not the Gary Brightwell Mountain.
No, they are not.
Because I'm not sure anyone would climb that.
No.
Or I'm not sure anyone would get off that mountain.
Hey-o. But look at the snow cap on Gary Brightwell.
I have been, and I didn't know this was pantless. Otherwise, I would have. Had I known, I have shrinkage problems. But if you reschedule this near the equator or August, I'm pantsless.
All right.
Well, like a mofo.
All right.
I say that because I'm not sure the kids are saying it anymore. But thanks for having
me. You're bringing it back.
I am bringing it back. I will also churn the butter later. A Quaker style. I don't dance. I just make my own butter. I know that your audience can't tell, but as you can smell, I have a plant-based diet. So I just want you to know.
Are you stoned right now?
It's a marijuana joke. Yes,
okay.
Thank you.
Right.
I'm not stoned.
I am
legally medicated under the state of California.
Look at this.
Oh, nice. You have a sponsor.
Today is sponsored by
Corova.
Corova cannabis infused cookies.
Yeah, you know what? They can make it a little easier to say for us who are medicated.
Okay.
Like Joe's Tidbits
right.
would be, don't you think, as opposed to a tongue twister?
Right.
Snossages.
Yes. Yeah, thank you. Something like Tofutti Cuties.
Yes.
Something that rhymes. Skittles. Slurpees. Things stoners would like for 20s.
I like the little picture on the back. Some like Dickensian,
yeah,
character that's passed out on the side of the road.
I think you're supposed to get medicated and then notice the subtle innerisms.
Right after you just clean the chimneys.
Yeah, exactly. Very contemporary. I do a lot of chimney cleaning myself. Well, yeah. AKA clean the bong.
Hey yo, I'm not a marijuana person.
Well,
let me just go ahead and tell you why I have these marijuana cookies.
It is curious.
They put me to sleep.
Gotcha.
Like I went down to
Have you seen my act? Because I tell you what, you could save a lot of money.
Well, my wife's sick of it when we're playing in the bedroom. Is that Kagan
she's
again?
Like, she just goes, she falls asleep. I pulled up in my car and she just took a nap, which she can't help it. It's my boredom is powerful.
Randy Kagan's instant narcolepsy.
Yes, exactly.
Is Randy Kagan joining us today?
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on.
It's my pleasure.
I feel like I ran into you
at
Fraser Smith's show on KLOS the other night.
That the land of misfit adult toys because I feel normal at the Fraser Smith show late at night.
Have you ever done it, Gary Brightwell? Also,
I know Fraser.
Well,
I
know we'd love to have
it.
You.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely.
I'll bring you along. We could do a little thing. You sit on my lap. I sit on your lap.
All right.
I yell switch. You do what you want, Gary. Just do it with love.
It is a borderline freak show.
I think it is,
and I don't mean that in a bad way.
I love it. It fits me like a glove.
Mm-hmm.
And I push the envelope. I burn the envelope. I do naughty things. I me too the envelope. And they don't seem to care.
There's
always somebody less appropriate than me.
True.
Either before or after.
And those are called whoever Don Barris brings
to
the show.
Yeah, Don Barris is, he's like I call him like a lion tamer, sort of, because he's got these crazies, a combination of somebody you'd move away from on a bus stop.
Yeah.
And then some really talented folks.
Yeah, yeah.
Like mixed in, and then you can't tell who's who.
No, absolutely.
It all works together, like your cough button.
Is he like a West Coast John Waters?
I would put that in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would have to say a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
I would say yes, because Waters really was drawn to characters.
Right.
Like real human insanity.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think we can all relate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, comedy is sort of a gravitational pull towards insanity with the side order of narcissism.
Absolutely. And Gary has grown his little pencil mustache. So
oh, that's a mustache that penciled. I thought you peed with that. I'm sorry.
What?
No, that's not very nice. But as you know, we talk a lot about road stories here, I understand.
Yes, this is the Road Stories Podcast.
Well, because I've always been a bromelid. In other words, I didn't do a lot of road on my own.
A bromelid?
Yeah, a bromelid. It's a plant that lives on another plant. Let me redo that. Can we?
No, that was my fault. I'm not smart enough
for your joke. No, I'm not smart enough to know that you're not smart enough. I should know that.
It's the Road Stories
podcast
where you laugh and you learn.
Thank you, Gary. Gary did tell me earlier, try to talk slower.
Right, absolutely.
He didn't say why or to who. I don't know. He didn't specify in what direction at all. But I would say, okay, let me try that again. Right. I've always been a barnacle.
Oh,
okay.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I know. I like to learn a new word. Yeah.
I didn't mean to do that. I don't like to teach people. I feel I'm already such a pompous a-hole genetically. I don't need any help. That's why I'm always by myself. Then I can annoy me.
What a bromelid is a plant that lives on another plant.
It is. It cannot exist. And a lot of times you'll see them in like Pier 1 by the wicker. Or the scented candles.
Is there another part of Pier 1 that doesn't have wicker?
Exactly. No, there's a subterranean place that I get to go to.
Oh, okay.
Okay,
right.
It's very special underneath.
Right. Okay.
But it's like a plant that you'll see. Sometimes people will use them as decorum because they don't have much of a root system per se.
Okay.
So you can replicate. This is not where I wanted it to go.
That's what I do.
I'm really sorry.
An elkhorn fern on the side of a tree.
Why can't Gary be
Come
with me
on.
All the time? He really is.
He
helps my complicated BS and simplifies it with wonderment.
Sounds like a bromelid. It's a bromelid.
He's a bromelid.
The bromelid on bromelid.
It is. I do a lot of tree hugging. And while you're hugging a tree occasionally, you will see a... Okay, here's the thing. I don't hug trees. I shtup trees.
A bromelid reach around?
Yeah, it's a... Thank you. That was worth the journey.
That's what I do,
right,
man.
There.
Randy. Not everybody
just
gets their own podcast.
Thanks for listening.
No, it's got its lines like that.
Can I bask in that line for a moment? I mean, there will be no dead air, but I will verbally be basking in that reach around bromelid reference.
Okay, thank you.
I want to drop the mic because I think we just zenithed.
Right. Well, they're expensive.
They're very expensive. So, that is to say, I've only ever been discovered by other comics.
Okay.
Agents and managers don't seem to like me, even in a group.
Really?
Yeah, if they get together in a group, they despise me in a greater fashion. But
did you tell them the bromelid story?
You know what? This is the first time I busted out the bromelid story.
Maybe,
but I'll tell you what, not the last. Heck no.
Next time you're over WME,
yeah, exactly.
Bromelid that motherfucker.
Yeah, case news. when you like to learn while you're sleeping. I'm like one of those tapes you listen to while you're sleeping. Mm. You wake up smarter but not entertained. So, like, for instance, I was... at an improv one time, I had gotten a fallout, and Dennis Miller was there. So I rolled with Dennis for a minute.
Okay.
Craig Ferguson saw me, and I rolled with him. Mitch Hedberg saw me, and then Pablo. So it's like my road story is Pablo Francisco. Sorry.
No, you know, I think Pablo.
I think we know that
Pablo.
Now.
How many?
Are you going to go Picasso?
Two?
Yeah,
would
exactly.
Are there two Pablos in comedy?
Yeah,
I don't know.
The
there
odds
is.
of Picasso. Yeah. From what I heard, he barely had enough time to paint. He was getting much pudding.
Right.
Picasso, right?
So I needed an opener for his blue period.
Yeah, that's why everything looked weird. He was in orgies, and there was an ear over here, and then a scrotum.
Are
if
you
I may.
Ready for the women of the Spanish War?
Exactly. Get ready for Zoftic bosoms. But that's how I was rolling. So my stories are always a little odd because. You know, when I was with Craig, we did 5 years and Carnegie Hall and all sorts of insanity. And I was in Schenectady.
Schenectady.
Yeah,
New York.
Night.
Hey.
And there was a heckler. It never happened. I'd done thousands of gigs with Ferguson. And for some reason, they yelled, "Get off the stage." So I ripped into this person because I know what Craig would want to do. You know, when you're opening for somebody, you're really entertaining one person.
Yeah.
I mean, if you know what's good for you, and if you want to keep your job, you entertain one person in spite of everything else. And that includes off stage.
Absolutely.
By the way, actually, mostly off stage is when your job starts.
You got to travel with that person.
You have to. Yeah. And so I could give a course on how to.
Gary has been a bromelid.
Oh, yeah.
For a lot of his career.
Most of my career.
Congratulations. Because a lot
of. Bill Engvall, Brian Regan.
Amazing
comics. I'm lucky enough.
Very lucky.
He can hang.
Yeah, and then that's all. It's a lot about the hanging.
Yes.
I guess every big name is different. I knew Engvall in the day. He couldn't have been any nicer.
Right.
I mean, Bill was That must have been
still
a great tour.
Yeah,
I would imagine he still is. I haven't seen him since he's gotten huge, but in the day, he is sweet as can be.
What is this day you keep talking about? What era
it's
is
right
this
now.
Day?
Oh, I guess the 90s.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. I guess the 90s or
yeah,
whenever 90s it is.
Or 2000.
Yeah,
early
before
2000.
The two. Like, my name's on the Comedy Store wall. My hair looks like it's from 78,
right?
But it was like 2009 or something.
Okay.
So it's, yeah, I'm not, yeah, either way, 90s. That's kind of my turf.
Okay. And is that where you got started?
And now is kind of also a very important part of my life. Now is very good.
Well, the now
with,
should be.
With the, but then,
the now should be the most important part of your life.
Rolling with Hedberg was another completely different story. That was like rolling. It seemed like what Johnny Depp was like as a pirate, like always drunk and stumbling around and like a character, and somebody had to babysit, and that was a different world.
Yeah. I had a buddy on here. I won't say his name because he didn't want to tell this story, who opened for Hedberg.
Seemed to open for Hedberg the minute he died.
Yeah.
The minute he died, everybody opened for Hedberg.
That's like everybody who went to Woodstock.
Yeah, it's really kind of odd. But a lot of times,
Guy was legit, San Francisco, who did.
You tell me his name and I'll let you know he's legit.
I'll tell you off mic because I'm not going to tell the story. Go on. So how he was pretty drunk all the time? Pretty
Mitch was magnificent. He was mostly very loving, just a super kind person. One day you'd be in the green room and he'd have a cat and he'd go, Mitch, why do you have a cat? And he said, It was stray. Or he'd say, if you want to talk to Randy, you better be a girl or have some marijuana. I can practice my Mitch in a minute.
That's pretty good.
But I actually have never seen Mitch. I was always touring with him. Strange, I've never seen him because it's so sad for me to watch him on TV. And we were together for a very, very long time. And I was there towards the end. And he was my dear friend. I didn't have the luxury of, you know, everybody comes up to tell me their stories about Mitch.
Uh-huh.
Very hurtful. Because most of them were hit and run. You know, novelty. Like,
sure.
Didn't know his dad, didn't know his mom.
Right.
Didn't know what his fart smelled like. I was blessed to know all of the above.
Right. So they'd come in and be like, oh, man, one night we fucking got hammered and blah, blah, blah.
Never
up
like, I'm sorry that you were, that it's not just a character, but he was a human being and he was your friend.
Yeah.
Never, not once did anyone ever say that to me. They just wanted to bless me with their Insta story, their nano moment.
Yeah, that's so funny. Pete Townsend says the same thing about Keith Moon.
Interesting.
He's like, everybody wants to come up and be like, man, that guy with the rock and roll lifestyle, what a fucking life. He's like, no, man, that's my friend who died.
Yeah. Where was the empathy for that? Like, not one person. It's strange when Pete Townsend has more empathy because there's, I don't know what's going on there.
Very little. I don't know him personally, but
he sure played a mean pinball from what I hear. I was doing research. What?
Yeah.
I love that.
I mean, I never even accidentally, I feel I'm pretty deviant, and I feel when somebody's worse than me, they're really bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Louis C.K. stuff, I'm like, wow. I was raised properly, and I thought I was a degenerate. I thought I was a vagrant.
I still think you can be a degenerate having been raised properly.
I hope so,
because
I'm definitely on the fringe, no question about it.
So are you out of San Francisco then?
No. I spent a lot of time in the Bay Area. I went right from Arizona, from Scottsdale. So in the day, the Bay Area seemed – and this is when a lot of the people were still there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean like Ellen wasn't still there.
Right.
But, Dana Gould and God rest his soul, Warren Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just speaking with
Mr.
Chappelle 2 nights ago about Warren Thomas. They know each other real well.
I didn't know Warren Thomas. Did he just pass recently?
No, he passed a long time ago.
Okay.
He was the one Chris Rock and Chappelle always mention when they talk about who is the funniest. Of course, they bring it up now that he's dead since he's less of a threat. But that's another story. I don't know where they were for him when he was – he got HIV and they knew. Very, very, very rich people knew, like Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle. And for some reason, nobody stepped up. But now he was the greatest comic ever now that he's no longer a threat.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's very – comedy is definitely – I'm not sure I ever would have done it had I known. I think I would have gone into the army. I would have seen less – death and destruction. I think I might have gone to Iraq and seen less deception and death.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just...
And you'd have a pension.
And thank you. I'd have a pension. And my biceps would be
you
tremendous.
You put in your time, and then you
can you imagine my abs and my tattoos? My You know, when you come out of the army, at least your war wounds look cool.
Yeah, he's got a tight five and a tight ass.
Exactly. Thank you. And you're talking. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's a tight 4.2 sometimes if it's not windy. But the road is what makes you. I mean, what's interesting when you come to L.A. is a stand-up, and I'm preaching to the choir here. But
right, absolutely.
Sometimes you get to a new town, but you know everybody because you ran into each other on the road. And I thought that was a nice surprise.
Yeah.
When you come to Hollywood or you come to the improv and you go, oh boy, I don't know anybody. And you go, hey.
No, wait. I know everybody.
I know everybody.
I know everybody.
That's what I like about Vegas.
Vegas is a perfect example.
We were just talking about Dennis Regan. And every time he's there, he throws like a little party.
That's very nice.
Brian, Brian.
No, Dennis throws the party when he's there.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
At like 2 in the morning.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's smart because now it's like a hub. There's like 40 of us there at any time.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
Guy used to do like a Friars Club thing there for a while,
right?
Which was really fun, but I think it was a little before its time. Now Vegas is just popping off with stand-ups.
Yeah.
Like, we own that town.
You know, I've never met Geechee Guy, his name comes up once every other episode.
Michael Cathers is his actual name. Does that come up?
Do we have to bleep that?
I think you have to bleep
that. Oh, I don't know.
Oh, for sure you do.
I never knew the real name.
Michael Cathers, yeah.
Yeah, okay, stop making me have to bleep it more than once.
I know, you're right. I'm very sorry.
I have to do work.
Yeah, I don't want. Why would you have to bleep that, though?
I was asking you if I had to bleep it.
Oh, okay, it was a joke then. Okay. No, I have those jokes too. Yeah. I don't even know if they're jokes either. But yeah, so I think Vegas is almost more so than LA a really good place to have a 2 a.m. party for comics.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Gary Basil does that on a Friday night too. Where
that's fun.
At the Laugh Factory. The green room there.
Nice.
He does a. Karaoke.
Oh, that's very fun.
So people are drunk and they're singing karaoke.
I think that sounds fun.
But it's all
fun.
The comics who happen to be working, you know, in the town that particular week or whatever, you know.
Because, day, show people were doing that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, before there was such a population of us.
Right.
And now we're doing it. I think it's we were rather scattered there, here and there. But now there's got to be like 100 of us there. And then living there, you got your Shema Tosh. I know
Shema's
there.
Yeah, she's been living there forever.
Carrot Top or Scott. You could bleep that out.
Oh, I got to bleep that too.
Yeah, you knew that one.
Everybody knew that one.
You got to bleep that one too. And Shema Tosh, her name's actually Steve.
I've had Shema on the show.
I love Shema. She's a powerhouse.
Yeah, I've known her since she lived out here.
Me too. I've known her since she lived out here. She's just beautiful and smart and cool and talented. Other than that, she's no good.
Yeah, other than
that. A killer body, which you can't say about many comics because they're dudes.
Except for you and your tight ass.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, Shema's sweet. At this point in my life, I like to differentiate who's nice and who's an a-hole. Because I figure everyone's pretty funny. I mean, everyone's got some game.
Sure. Or else they wouldn't be around.
They wouldn't be around, and they wouldn't be in Vegas, and we wouldn't be here.
Right.
But I tend to lean towards who's not an a-hole, which I think there's a lot of nice comics. I think we're pretty good.
I think the majority is nice. I think there's always like a handful you go, oh, I've had a run-in with that person.
Yeah,
depends on what your level of nice you're talking about. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
And yeah, so okay. What's your level of nice? I mean, like when you're working with somebody, a big name, have you ever had an instance where they were just like a stereotypical like diva, aka pain in the butt?
Yeah, but I wasn't working with them.
Gotcha.
And it was Kevin Hart.
Well, you would expect that.
But he did a night at the Ice House, a 7 o'clock show. I was on the 9 o'clock, and not only were you not allowed in the green room,
yeah,
like the whole thing was perimetered off.
Yeah.
And it's like, fine, I get it. If you're headline, like, I understand. I let people, when I headline, I let people in the green room. I'm not one of those guys. But I get it. You don't want to get swamped. I get it. But don't block off the whole fucking club.
You guys got helicopters.
For the next show.
Homicide ribbons.
And then hung out in for the second show so he could go over with his posse or whatever.
I don't understand the comedy posse.
Yeah. Oh, I got to say, Chappelle had a minimalized posse, I thought.
Last night?
Yeah, I thought it was, and he was just kind of out and about. I mean, he was drunk AF.
Yeah, that's what you said.
I mean, monster drunk. But he did have his own people.
Mm-hmm.
I just happened to be sitting by him, but it wasn't a huge posse, and he was super accessible. I just went up and said, yo, what's up? So he seemed to go the other way with it, unless his security is super stealth.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it is. I've heard that Cedric the Entertainer, when I was rolling with Ferguson, a lot of times you'd hear rumors because
Can two white guys roll with each other?
Well, I'm Jewish, so it's an off-white.
Okay. All right.
And he's Scottish, and I'm not sure if that's even in the crayon box at all. So, no, I really, as a Jew, I do feel filthy, for one, guilty, and then not really white. But I forgot what my point was. Probably because I don't have
comedy
a point.
Posse. I don't know.
Comedy posse.
Oh,
comedy
posse. Craig was very alone, which I liked.
That's it
was
how just, it should be, really, I think. Mm-hmm. Not to have to be alone, but, I mean, you know, whoever you're... whatever your opening act is, and then maybe a road manager.
And
three,
if
three people,
I agree. If you have, I know this is going to sound super pretentious, but I was this was not my party. I was invited to it, but we were on private jets a lot, and you do hang out with the pilots. Like our best friends were pilots. You begin to know everything about them because they. You, what are you going to do? Ditch them? They're responsible for your lives. And you want to keep an eye on them so they're not boozing up.
Right, right.
Because there is, they tell you all the, you know, if they have like a sip of drink, there's a certain amount of hours they got to go sit in the corner and meditate. Like it's very regulated.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, you don't have to put your seat in an upright position, but the pilots have to be very dogmatic in what they can't be. Woo-hoo-hoo!
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But they did let Craig fly the plane sometimes, which
really?
I don't think is too legal. Yeah. He was a gaviator is what I would call him. Probably why I'm not touring with him anymore.
Where? How do you decipher?
a gay aviator would be a gaviator, of course.
Oh, Ferguson's gay?
No.
Oh.
That makes what makes it funny.
Oh, that what makes why you don't tour with him anymore.
Yeah, that's another reason that I'm no. He just threw me out of the plane.
Okay.
And but he would land and take off on occasion.
He would land it?
Yeah, you'd hear this like... And I go, wow, that must have been Craig.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's...
Well, you know, you tip the pilots.
I didn't know that either. Yeah, did you ever tip a pilot?
No, but your boss did. My boss.
Oh, really?
For sure. Whether it was always. Just... Oh, always.
I didn't know that.
Oh, you tipped the heck out of them.
So, yeah, no, he tipped the pilots.
I think it's pretty common.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I've only been with the one person on the one
plane. What do you tip a pilot?
I don't know.
Okay.
And you'll have your assistant do it maybe. So
I think it's $100 each.
You figure at least a C-note. Figure at least a C-note.
What's a C-note?
Maybe
note?
More.
Really?
100. Yeah.
It's 100.
Okay. Sorry. I don't know what a C-note. I'm sorry. I got my dialogue from the 2000s, not 1938.
I don't know exactly what he would tip, but I would...
So a Finsky is out?
It's at least 100.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a C note.
Which is still replied to.
Your life is in their hands.
Yeah.
All right. That's a C note.
It's still called a C note. Or a Benjamin.
Benjamin, I know.
Benjamin, you know.
Where does C note come from?
From the century. 100.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Word. Speaking of three white guys, we got no flavor. We're like an empty spice rack in here.
I do love the pilots, though. Like
me,
said,
too.
Interesting. Because they were always, always at your safety above anything else. They'd go, you know what? We could probably land there, but there's a system. I say we wait it out. You just call ahead and tell them that you're going to be late.
Yeah.
And they go, well, you know, the people you would call say, well, no, they're supposed to. The show starts at this time. It's like we can't get there, and we're not going to risk it.
Pilots don't have that. Yeah, there's no gray area, and I noticed that with pilots. And that's why Ferguson would always tell me that's why he liked flying. There was no BS. It was the opposite of show business. Like there's no gray area. It's like that. There's no appeasing somebody. So there was times we had to land immediately and get in a van just because the weather was so bad. There's no, I didn't know you're Craig Ferguson. Oh, you're on CBS. No, it's like, we don't care who you are. We're getting our butts down. You experience that.
Yeah. Or they have to divert you to another airport, and then it could be an hour and a half to the venue, whereas the other one was a lot closer. But you know, this is going to be safer. And
do you factor that in when you leave?
They tend to. I mean, we did, and we always. Sometimes he had a tour bus and a jet, so it'd be like sometimes somebody didn't want to get on the jet, or he didn't want us on the jet. He just had options. So sometimes he slept better on the bus, and then we take the jet. It was just strange.
Yeah.
It just depends on what it was all about, obviously, what Craig was feeling like, if he was tired or.
Here's a question. Did you write for him also?
Yes, but Craig didn't need it. I wrote for his show. I wrote for his show
for
many years.
Right.
But on top of that, I did. Craig has got the strength of. Craig's a lot of things.
Sure.
One of which is extremely talented.
Yeah.
MF-er. I mean, not only can he be spontaneous with the best of them, he's really good writer.
Yeah.
But that said, which is a term I hate, because everything is said. It's not that song or that. But anyways, that said again, I did help him as it, like if we toured it, you'd at for a while.
Oh yeah. Sure.
It was just like
because I would because my buddy help. My buddy Oshak wrote on the show also. I don't
oh
know.
Bob, yeah, yeah, I know Bob. Bob's brilliant.
Yeah, Bob's one of my dearest friends. Lives around the corner.
Great man.
I haven't seen him in 6 years.
I just talked to him and I email him on occasion. One of my favorite people.
He's, you know, because I was like, how do you write for that guy? Like, it's
for Ferguson.
Yeah, I could because I do a lot of writing for comics on TV and stuff. But I'm like, hey, how do you? The guy is so
well
fast and stream of conscience.
But he did have sketches for a while, mm-hmm. if you remember. So I don't. I think Oshak was there later,
okay.
but I was there earlier, and he had tons of sketches. So the answer to that was that's how you do it.
Oh, you, you
everybody was involved with some skit or
oh, okay.
sketch, or they'd have Liam Neeson, and they wanted something. Liam said, "Yeah, I'll do a skit." Somebody had to write that,
right?
But and then a lot of his off the top ad lib. I was involved with because it was relative to his weekend, which I went to.
Sure. Okay. That makes
so
sense.
So a lot of times he would yield from our experience. So I was able to get in his ear a little bit before we went into the writer's room and say, remember this, remember this, remember right. this, remember this. So, and then a lot of it in the moment, there was room for people who were good at it to be spontaneous
sure.
and add. There was a hesitation in the room though. It wasn't like buddies. It was like corporate.
Oh yeah.
It was definitely corporate. Hmm. It was Worldwide Pants meet CBS, so we were doubly effed.
Yeah,
and,
a lot, yeah.
and Craig would talk about it. He had two tuchuses. I mean, it was just multiple butts to kiss.
Right.
You know, and Letterman at the time was notoriously not a nice person to Craig.
At the time?
Oh, yeah, I don't
Craig.
Know. I don't
okay.
know. I'm saying to Craig.
Okay.
I don't know anything about... And I don't really know about Letterman. I only know what I asked Craig
sure.
about his experiences with Dave, and they were aloof at best.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that's odd. Does he know that you make him squillions of dollars and that he hired you? But in reality, I'm not sure Letterman did hire him. It might have been Peter LaSalle.
Sure.
And that Peter had the juice at the time. And I was lucky. The one thing Craig told me to do, no matter what you do while you're here, try to talk to Peter.
Yeah.
Even though he hates writers and he considers you recycling and or debris, but you tour with me, so maybe you'll get a chance. Mm-hmm. And Rickles, those are my two
oh,
precious
yeah.
times, many times with LaSalle, Rickles, their wives, my wife at the time. That's what I have to thank Craig for, is those moments where Craig would say, follow me
right
at the show. And I don't even know what he's talking about. And he'd go in there, and I'd go in there. And it was Rickles, and he mm-hmm. closed the door. He was that kind of friend at
awesome.
The time. Even knowing that I thought Rickles crapped funnier than he was.
Right.
Like I would go, not only is he funny, but you're so not funny compared to him. And neither am I.
Right, sure.
Like, and he was willing
right.
to. And those are the moments for me, outside of the money and all that wonder stuff. I'll never forget the time I had with LaSalle and telling me, you know, he's a Holocaust survivor. And
LaSalle is?
Peter LaSalle is a Holocaust survivor.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, his number's right on his arm.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, wow. You, absolutely. Phenomenal. Quick story. He was liberated by drunken Frenchmen on Shetland ponies drinking vodka. I mean, the story's insane. Craig told me that Spielberg was throwing money at LaSalle for the story, and Peter was so still hurt by the entire experience,
no.
he did not want to regurgitate any of it.
Right.
But I was able to be a fly on the wall and hear some of that from Peter.
And you sold it to Spielberg?
And now I'm making millions of dollars. Exactly. I'm just a fly and or spy on the wall. Hey, you know, it's all fair in love and Holocaust. I think that's what they said. But it was a Holocaust of funny
yeah.
after I wrote it. I'm sorry. They are abusing that. They're abusing the
pocket.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah. Have
say,
a little
so what else do you have? So,
exactly. That's great.
But pitch me.
Is there anything else? I'm
yeah.
sorry. What?
Heard this one.
Yeah, that's next. We need Cedric the Entertainer in the Holocaust, if that's possible. But and those experiences with Rickles especially, that day when I walked in, he didn't know. He looked very old and he was very stooped over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Rickles, when it was go yeah. time, he was go time.
Yeah,
but
he was
it wasn't
around. Yeah.
He kind of saved his energy. So he had his head down and it was just he and I. And he said, and I was very nervous. And he said, so you open for Craig? And I go, yeah. He goes, you couldn't get a better gig? Right. Just like that. And I go, are you offering? And then one time when Ferguson had a Christmas party and I got there early because Craig knew I was just there for Rickles. Like I literally stood at the door like a dog
yeah.
waiting for Rickles. So Rickles comes in with his wife and Craig's there greeting people, very cordial. And the minute Rickles takes his wallet out, sees Craig, starts handing him money and goes, buy yourself a better house. Like just, he was relentless. And that night I stood next to him and I said, can I get you a drink? He said, yeah, I'll take I go, I know what you take, Don. It's two fingers, you know, or two, three fingers of vodka, no ice. And like, he didn't know how I could possibly knew it. I had to explain to him about the internet and that I watched the inaugural moment with Reagan. And that, he thought I was like some sort of alchemist.
Right, right.
Like, how could a young-ish person know this? But I had just watched it on YouTube.
Yeah.
And, you know, when the little kid he put him in a ditch. Do you remember? He handed Don Rickles the mic and said, "Be funny, Webster."
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right.
On top of the story that is, as you know the story about how Rickles even got the gig, right?
For Reagan?
Yeah.
For Reagan? It has something to do with Sinatra.
Exactly.
What was it? Tell our
listeners. Sinatra says, Reagan says, I'm not doing the impressions. "Frank, I need you at the inaugural." Frank's like, "I can't wait. That'll be great. By the way, I'm bringing Rickles." Reagan says, "That can't happen." He goes, "You know what? I'm busy that day." Reagan goes, "You know what? Bring Don."
Right.
Okay, so already it's thin ice. Like, a ridiculous situation. So then he gets to the inaugural event. Thin ice. Everybody's worried. And then Webster, the little bastard, I'm sorry, the pituitary glandular mutant, instead of saying "break a leg" or nothing, or "ladies and gentlemen, Don Rickles," hands him the mic in front of the world and Reagan and Sinatra and says, "Be funny."
Mm-hmm.
So, and everyone, nobody says, knows what to do. Rickles, do you remember the moment?
I don't remember.
I'm thinking
moment,
in
actually.
My mind, this is, what is he going to say? He hasn't even started yet. This guy, Rickles, is buried.
Right.
He's screwed.
Yeah.
He's up against the corner. And Rickles goes, "Well, there's one black kid that won't be playing basketball." and then launches into 5 minutes of Reagan, try to stay awake. "Doc Severinsen, the hospital called. You died an hour ago." Right. I mean, oh my goodness. The nicest thing he said was about the black kid not playing basketball.
Right.
And ever since then, I had just... And I got a chance to say that to Don, and he looked at me like I was from a time machine.
Yeah.
And I said, "No, it's a Google machine." But Rickles was so sweet to be around and so kind. He was brutally kind sometimes as well. Like, as you know, just in my experience, he would point his love and kindness in a way he would his that flip side to him. So I was always enamored. And when I'm depressed, I do watch Rickles with Letterman. I think he was the best. Letterman was the best with him.
Yeah.
And Johnny. Lena was a little threatened, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He was just wouldn't let him be himself.
I'm going to guess, and just not really having hung out a lot with you, you get depressed a lot.
I do battle depression. Yeah. And I'm not embarrassed to say it.
Okay.
I am on an antidepressant. I've been on one for 15 years. I was genetically given a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Handsome. I suffer. Fairly
tight
well
ass.
Fairly well endowed. I'm tripping over it constantly. And, yeah, depression and anxiety. Huh. So yeah, I preach it, I teach it, I am it, I walk it, I talk it. California, if you are listening, is a wonderful place to be depressed because they will help you and they don't stigmatize it quite as badly. Hey, Ron Artest came out and said he had problems with depression. So if Ron can do it, I can do it. Please don't ask who. I knew you were going to ask.
Meta World Peace.
Thank you, Gary. Thank
you. Basketball player.
Okay, he's the same guy.
Same person. Okay. Yeah.
He just changed his name.
Hall of Fame. Anyways, why don't you and I talk for a while,
Do you
Gary?
Want to explain?
You might just, not know. He knows nothing about sports at all.
But that's negative nothing. That's like, if he'd started to learn, it still wouldn't catch for a while because that was like pop culture for a minute. That was...
Like at lunch before here, I made a Todd Marinovich reference.
Right.
And I knew Murray wasn't going to get... That's a hard one to get anyways, but I mean, I knew Murray wasn't going to get that one
But that
all.
One, really?
Yeah.
Because that's a young one. He can't go to, you know, that's archival and that was on a hieroglyphic.
Right.
That's pretty contemporary reference. Sorry.
No, I just like
you don't
shark
like basketball.
Eyes.
You don't have to. It's a distraction. Basketball is a distraction from my depression in a lot of ways, truly.
Well, whatever helps you with your depression, I'm behind 100%.
This is not. This is really sinking me into a volcano of doom.
Listen, you know what? You can grab my kid's basketball on the way out. Just dribble
even
it
out.
Just dribble it back to the valley.
I'll even out. Your kid plays basketball. Well, it did skip a generation. That's good.
Oh.
Thank God. You broke the chain. He will be a man.
No. No. Let's be one thing clear. I was forced to play sports as a child and sucked horrendously.
I gotcha. I respect that.
My kid wanted to play basketball, and let's just say I'm glad I kept my band uniform.
Well, there's always the flute.
He's got his dad's ability. Trust me.
Gotcha. That's pretty funny. But he has the will of a Ron Artest.
You can.
Okay, he has the will.
I will take that as a compliment.
Oh, yeah, it is a compliment. But yes, I think a lot of comics kill themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Drake Sather, as we all, I don't, you know, Zoolander. Yeah. Also an old acquaintance of mine, not a dear friend, but a dear friend of a lot of dear friends. And that was a big loss.
Yeah.
For somebody who was handsome. I mean, just a beautiful man. I'm sorry. Handsome as the day is long. Smart, funny, interesting. He was going through a divorce. But when you have three kids, it's something to get ahead of. And if you stigmatize it, some people might take that option instead of...
stigmatize depression?
Yeah.
Oh, we don't do that on this show.
No, you can. No, you can. But I'm saying in general,
it's my show. I'll do it because
I know where your heart is. I can tell. But I'm just saying, I really do think it's a dangerous thing. And in comedy, least of all, we really need to understand diversity, and that includes all sorts of emotional diversity. Mm-hmm. In my opinion,
no, I know several of my friends suffer from depression. Well, I probably do also. I just haven't got it checked out.
I doubt it. You know,
there's a side effect after open heart surgery. It's depression.
For sure, a lot of post op, which is another example of people really not. If maybe you had a good doctor who prepared you for a lot of that in post-op, but a good doctor will let you know, by the way, the neck up has some problems too. You know, maybe get ahead of it a little bit. Maybe you're going to feel like you're not doing enough and your body's not healing enough. And oh my gosh, I'm not being funny. And I got to get to my podcast, which all things don't serve you very well when you're in a healing situation.
No, apparently not that podcast the day after I got out of ICU.
It's very impressive, though. For a guy who doesn't do sports, you're a stud.
You are
tough as nails.
I did a podcast with Graham Elwood the day after my open heart surgery the ICU.
I love.
Oh, we just had
no, you didn't.
Yeah.
In the ICU?
Swear to God.
But
that is very impressive.
But you didn't push the right button, and it didn't
repair. Well, I was on oxy.
Well, yeah, the guy was on liquid morphine.
They stopped my heart for 6 hours. I'm sorry I couldn't figure out how to work Zoom.
Oh, that excuse. I'm sorry. I was going to the light at the time.
Who suffers then? Your listeners.
Yeah, exactly. Where's the real pain?
That's
audible.
Right.
It's audible pain. I'm sorry you don't get hospitalized for that. But Graham is also one of my, and I'm sadly never get to see him, but he and I get in a room together, and
I wish you should have come to lunch with us. I should have told you to come down there early to lunch with us. I apologize.
No, it's okay. But we, Graham and I get, and it's just, it's silly. We can't stop just bothering each other. And he just, I love riff. We had a couple of auditions together where it was just like he and I were down to it. And just, I love him. He just gets everything.
Yeah.
You don't have to explain anything to Graham.
Oh, all right. Go do his podcast.
Go do his. Captain Bromelid, take your BS words and go over to Graham. Does he do a podcast? I don't know.
Comedy Film Nerd.
Yeah,
I do an old-fashioned thing called Radio KLS.
Oh, here we
go. I know.
Are.
It's very, very old school, 95.5 KLS. And it is on
the internet.
iHeartRadio.
Oh, it's on iHeartRadio?
Every week?
It is on.
Are
I'm on every Sunday. Yeah.
What's your segment?
I know everybody's baffled by it. I just do jokes and not my material. I don't know. Don Barris came up to you the other day. What do you do? Because everyone's got an angle.
Sure.
I go, I write jokes. I think of things between the Sundays, and if they come to me, I Facebook them, and if they get anything decent, then I add them to the list, and I just sit down, unlike this, because you can't do this every week.
Right.
You know, eventually, they're tired of your story. You know what I mean? It's like
I've been doing this for 11 years, and people are tired of my stories.
I'm not tired. I find it delightful.
Thank you.
My buddy Mark Brazil, who everyone wants to hear the story about that 70s show, which is good, but luckily, he's also super funny.
Right.
So you could have a guy like Mark on, who will tell the story once, but will also come back and can talk about anything.
Is he short?
Not at all. He's a tall, handsome dude.
Okay.
Yeah, he shot himself in the leg. I don't want to ruin all the stories, but he's one of the few guys that you might meet, you know, in our line of work that knows what it's like to feel the hot steel of a bullet.
Oh, that was sexy.
Yeah.
Man.
I know.
I think his name came up last week with Sue Kalinske. We have a ton of mutual friends. We've just never crossed paths.
Well, Sue Kalinske, another brilliant mind and body. Am I right, guys?
Mm-hmm. We're not
too
that
soon.
Kind of podcast.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Too soon.
Too soon. I don't know. Too soon's the name of my masseuse. You guys try to keep up. Oh, no. Too soon.
So you just write jokes and just go on.
I know,
and
it seems baffling to comics.
I know. What?
I know.
Especially
Everybody
Los Angeles
me,
comics.
What do you do? I go, first of all, you could listen to it and find out.
I listened to it.
Okay, well, then you'd hear what I did.
Well, I never seem to give you your segment.
Oh, because my segment's very late. That's, you know, we work cheap and we go late.
I was scheduled to be there on 11:30.
Yeah, that's the fancy spot.
I went on at 2.
Oh, yeah, that... Welcome to radio. Welcome to the Fraser Smith Show.
Yeah.
You know, Don Barris brings in a village of people, and I'm one of the only ones that is a one. I just go in. It's just, nothing. I do jokes and I talk about whatever's on my mind, from Japanese people eating whales to the Rams to the Lakers. Though they have sports people that will come out and go, really? Did you have to talk about sports? And I said, but I added sound effects and inappropriate jokes.
Who's the guy who hosts the sports radio show here?
Dave Smith.
Dave Smith. He asked me to be on. He's like, oh, you're really funny. I want you to be on
Dave's
my show.
Dave's good.
I'm like, I know nothing about sports. He's like, yeah, come on anyway.
No, don't. Honestly, don't if you don't know anything about sports.
I know.
Sports,
I keep telling. Nobody understands
you really
how
don't.
Much I don't know about sport. My buddy Rich Williams wrote on the Best Damn Sports Show. He was on for like the first 6 years.
He probably would have loved to give you a gig.
And then, well, he's like, hey, man, I hear you're looking for a gig. We need some writers over.
Great opportunity.
And I said, I don't know anything about sports. And he's like, just, you know, none of us do. That was his thing. None of us do. Just write a couple jokes about Bo Jackson or whoever it was at the time.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, who does Bo Jackson play for?
Oh, click. Yeah, click.
Oh, you don't know anything about sports. I'm like, I said that.
Right. No, but you really don't know.
As a matter of fact, I don't know so much. I know it wasn't Bo Jackson, the guy who referenced. I forget who it was. Whoever the home run guy was for a while there.
Oh, Bo Jackson?
Oh, no. You're
McGuire. McGuire. I'm worse than you. McGuire?
It might have been McGuire.
Sosa?
No,
Bonds. Round 2003. Barry Bonds. Yeah,
the three of us together took a village to not know about baseball.
Oh, look who doesn't know sports now. Yeah, I'm not the only one.
Just so you guys can't hear.
When you say the home run guy.
Yeah.
That's a lot. I got you. Babe Ruth.
I wasn't around for Babe Ruth.
He might have gone candy bar guy at that point. He might have.
He went candy bar.
Everybody knows that. The Babe Ruth wasn't named after Babe Ruth. It was named
after
the president's
kid. That's when you wanted to see Babe Ruth, before he went candy bar.
Yeah, before he went. He sold out with the candy bar.
I would have gone Reggie bar then.
But
the short-lived Reggie
on your
Jackson
behalf,
bar. Yes,
and my behalf, and anyone's behalf, when you work for a late show or a pop culture-based show. Okay, well, I don't know anything about pop culture. I don't want to know anything about pop culture. Right. It annoys the F out of me.
Right.
But as you know, every morning you get a stack of magazines you hope were in 2-ply so you can wipe your ass with them. But no, you got to read what Britney's doing, every last vulgar effing detail. Otherwise, you lose your job.
You didn't see what was on my bar in the living room? We can go read up on it right now.
I didn't. But so you can relate. I mean, in a way, you could have. Maybe should have taught yourself a little bit about sports because I know we don't love pop culture, but we learn. I mean, we Google it.
I like
so we
pop
can...
culture.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah.
That's not that.
I could care less about the non-union Best Damn Sports Show back
in 2004.
Oh, see,
to me, I'd much rather work for a sports show.
See, that's the thing. Like, I have this conversation with my friends all the time, including Gary and Bill and other
Graham.
Friends. Graham. Well, not so much Graham. Graham's more like me. But, like, I find it weird that my buddy lived next to Brian May, the guitar player for Queen, and didn't know.
Wow.
But he could tell you who was fucking first baseman for the Pirates in 67.
Yeah.
And to me, that was like, how could you not know? And he's like, how could you not know who, you know, the third base of the Dodgers is?
Oh, but Queen, and that's one of the greatest guitar. I mean, that dude raped the guitar.
No, that dude's amazing.
Astonishing guitar player. So I could see that. I could see both of your angles on that.
All right.
But music transcends a little bit more. You know, you can go. Sometimes your lady's not going to go to a baseball game with you, but you could go to the Queen show and both enjoy it. So it's divisive by nature, sports, gender-based, blah, blah, blah. In other words, I'm saying you're not that dorky.
My wife just explained the history of the Rams to me the other day.
Well, it is confusing. It is confusing. Does she do a lot of explaining in the bedroom to you? Is there charts?
Just about somebody on the Rams.
I don't know.
I forget what position
he plays.
I don't
know what it is. Yeah, I don't know what position it is, but I think it's tight end. I'm not really sure.
Pat Hayden. We're going to go back a bit.
Yeah, we're going to go back
Roman
a little bit.
Roman Gabriel.
Wow. We're going to go back to when the Olympics were naked.
Wow. That's why she called me Roman Gabriel. Okay, that makes more sense now.
Yeah, she screams out obscure references from the Renaissance. Like, wow, this gal is classy. I can tell you how I got a job on the Late Late Show. I asked Craig Ferguson to give me one.
Okay.
So that helped. But I was in a room full of people who were not stand-ups. Has that ever happened to you where you were in a writer's room and you and the boss were the only stand-ups in the room? It's pretty rare, isn't it?
Yeah.
And because there is a big difference. I noticed that they considered a bigger difference than we do. In other words, I found the... Craig said that one of the things you should do is get along with the other writers.
Sure, absolutely.
And that didn't go so well.
Well,
I agree with you. I was, like I said, I had a very brief, like, 5 days at Keenan Ivory Wayans' show.
Mm-hmm. 5 days.
5 days. And where they just dangle the carrot in front of me going, hey, you know, you got to write these jokes. We got to, you know, do stuff. And I would write. But I was, you know, it was all about they wanted to get free material from you and dangle the carrot in front of you.
That you might get a steady job.
Yeah, this is, your audition.
There's something wrong with that mic. Hold that closer.
This is your audition is what it was.
Right.
Sure.
And it was like, you know, they would call you and say, hey, here's the topic for Wednesday. Here's the topic for Thursday. You know, write these jokes about this.
Monologue
stuff. And finally it was like, do I have this job? Because I'm putting in a lot of work all week and there's talk of a job, but I'm not getting a paycheck. I'm not getting what's going on. And finally, I just left. But in that room, though, there was maybe one other stand-up, and there was like 15 writers.
It's sort of a new world
and
order,
and nobody of color, which I thought was really strange.
Oh, really?
Ferguson also
really strange
or girl.
For a Keenan Ivory Wayans, you know.
Oh, that
show.
Is interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that is a bit of a shock.
Yeah.
I thought Sully wrote on that show. He didn't.
Well, like I said,
not a real black guy.
I was only there five. Days.
So
who knows how many people?
Right.
But I remember one of the producers asking me, "Go, do you know any other comics of color that you know you could suggest?" And I was like, "I don't remember. You remember Van Gunther?
I do.
Yeah.
I
got him. They had.
Freeze
they brought
love.
Him." Yeah, but
I remember Freeze.
Yeah, he's great. Funny,
but I mean, so I had Van come in, and they did the same thing to him. Dangled it for like five days, and he was like, "Do I have a job? Do I know? You know?"
I wonder why that is.
Terrible.
Well, I think it's because they were just, and I'm just going off my experience. Not that this is, but they're trying to find their footing, especially at that time when Keenan was coming out, and it was just after the late night wars, and everybody was getting
it was so
to find
frustrating.
The footing. You know, they're gonna.
It was so frustrating because the writing. Because it was mostly for monologue, it was so structured up until it got to Keenan.
Right.
You know, it was like, write about this subject. Turn in your.
I think it's more often than not like that, because with the Late Late Show, I was shocked at how regimented, almost militant your time was.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Especially
but, I mean,
on a nightly show.
But here's what it was like. Especially. It was like, here's the topic, write your jokes, turn in your pages. We're all going to have a meeting and talk about everybody's pages, where like this. And then when it get to, okay, these are the jokes that we want. And then you would have to go in and then pitch them verbally to Keenan. And he would he would make a couple notes.
No head writer?
Yes, there was one head writer.
Wouldn't you? You would just think the head writer would be the one that would be the ambassador.
It wasn't. It wasn't that. It was crazy. It
didn't
make any sense.
You're right. Maybe they were just figuring out. Maybe
they
were just trying to find whatever their best feet forward.
Because that's what Fallon did when I was over at Fallon. When he got the Tonight Show, he was just like, "Let's throw everything at the board and let's see what sticks." Because I'm just another white guy with a talk show,
right? So and see who is going to
And see who's going to deliver that.
Right. And it's hard to know, I guess, until you do. You throw it against the wall. I just know with the Ferguson show, everyone had already been teamed up, so I was late to the party. A lot of them were left over from the Kilbourne show as well, so I was really late to the party. So a lot of these guys were teamed up, and they'd go, okay, everybody go right, and they'd go in their teams and their groups, and they'd all have lunches together, and I was, you know, masturbating in the corner by myself, well, with Craig. But Craig was like the only guy I knew there.
Right.
But it was like Craig was in a suit, and I remember the first time I saw him, I was like, I was so stupid. I'm like, going, look at you, little monkey boy. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you host a show. Because I never, when I toured with him, there was no, he wasn't wearing a suit.
You were touring with him before the show?
Yeah, yeah, for many years before.
Oh,
no,
really?
No. Many years before he asked me to write for the show.
He had
the show.
Oh, okay.
He had just gotten the show.
Okay.
And then we were rolling. He ran into me. I just happened to be booked with him. And then he took a liking to me. So he said, hey, why don't we go to Vegas? And then it just kind of happened. He didn't say, hey, we're going to be together 5 years.
Sure.
It was literally almost no money early on.
Right.
Seriously, chump change. Or no money sometimes. I just didn't ask.
Yeah.
I just went. Or I'd sell T-shirts at the door.
Mm-hmm.
And he was doing Tommy T's. He was doing small clubs. We were getting rental cars. He wanted to work out. Like, he could have gone into theaters right away.
Sure.
I didn't know. I was just – it's all hindsight.
Yeah.
As I look back, I realized he kind of had a plan. He didn't want to do a 4,000-seat theater until he had grinded it out in comedy clubs. So we were in rental cars and doing shitty clubs and working on material, and I was going through a divorce, and he was going through a divorce, and It was just like Dumb and Dumber,
right?
Kind of the two of
Scottish.
Us. Yeah, very Scottish.
Was he drinking at the time?
No. He was sober. Okay. Very sober.
I was going to say, two divorced comics at a Brendel bar. There's going to be a lot of booze.
No, you would think there'd be a swimming pool full of booze.
Full
you would
of
think
Guinness or...
it'd be Rio de Guinness. You would think, but he at this time and still is a sober man. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, he had me quit smoking pot for 6 months, which didn't go. I mean, it went. I quit.
Right.
But not pleasant.
No.
No, it wasn't pleasant. I thought it was a little unfair, but he just there was a couple times on the road where I wasn't very smart with it. And so we were in Canada, and it was cold. It was like 2 degrees outside, so I smoked in my room. And then this is before legalization. This is you know, 8 years back or whatever, 7 years
before
ago.
Before you can go to the freaking grocery store around the corner and buy cookies.
Yeah, now it's illegal not to smell like pot.
Right.
Like literally, you have an air freshener that smells like pot, so you'll fit in. Literally, there are incense now to cover up the smell of not pot. Times have changed.
I did an NA show with, I forget his
NA
name.
NA is very serious business.
Yeah.
It's not AA.
No, it's much more.
Yes.
Yeah. And
bleachy the needly.
And I was like, man, you know, it was just after legal, recreational legally. And I was like, man, you guys got to be pissed.
Just missed the boat.
Just missed
right.
it, man.
There would have been meetings how you should be smoking pot. How did that gig go?
It was good, except it was in a, and I've done a ton of them, but this was in a
ballroom?
No, a gymnasium.
Oh, gotcha.
So already it's like, hi.
Yeah.
And then the hot dog.
And they weren't high.
No, they weren't. Oh. They were the hot dog vendors were in the back of the room. So it was just whenever they finished their hot dog, they'd get up and go get another one and then wait online.
Upstaged
and then,
by a wiener. It's happened to me many times.
All the time.
Right now, two wieners. But I just noticed in the writer's room that there was us and them, which I didn't realize. Mm-hmm. It was the sort of college educated, studied comedy, studied literature.
Sure.
And then there was the degenerate. And I don't know exactly your... But I know your stand-up, so there's a certain amount of agency
in
their lives. And they really are different. As a matter of fact, Craig used to a little bit mock – one of the head writers went to Harvard, and he would call him Harvard boy. There was like he literally a little bit belittled him for not being more of a sort of seedy
– As they should, man. My buddy wrote a book called How Harvard Killed the Television Comedy.
Interesting.
Because it was all just incestuous for the longest time. It was just
truly
you
was.
Had to be a Harvard writer.
And at least it was snobby.
Yeah.
And secular.
So. Yes, absolutely.
And opinionated.
And extremely white and
yeah,
male.
Yeah, and very white and slightly blue, red state-ish. Yeah, it was. I noticed it. And I think comedy is definitely a little more diverse just because we all crawl out of... I went to the comedy store the other day and everyone that you know works there is wanting to be a comic.
Sure, of course.
So this girl, Emily, I'm talking to her. She's like from Vermont, from a farm. Like she dreamt about the comedy store. She really has a passion for it. And she could go to college and study whatever it is that writers do.
Right.
But there was something and still is something in people that it draws you away from college and more towards that kind of raw.
Sure. Yeah.
Which even at the comedy store, it's political, but it's still raw as hell.
Yeah. I haven't been up in a while. Ever since I got booted out, I don't really go back.
I got a bit booted out myself when Tommy came in.
Right.
After, passed by Mitzi.
Sure.
That was great. And then Tommy took control towards the end of... Mitzi.
Right.
And then there's a dude named Adam who I hear is very nice.
Have you never met him?
I never met him, no.
He said, like, I email him. He's like, yeah, come on up, man. But, you know, we got to, I tell you, there's the lineup tonight.
Yeah.
What
I do is Mondays now, if your name's on the wall, you can. Do you know the Mondays?
Yeah.
Okay,
totally.
So I do it for people who don't know. But if your name is on the wall and you're not getting in circulation, it's still a way you put your name, like, in a hat.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 10 o'clock they pick and they put up the lineup. And it's a way that you can still get up. And I've done 3 weeks in a row, which has been really
fun. Oh, nice.
Brought Brazil and my buddy Mark Brazil and Don Barris and Frazier's down there and Brody Stevens.
Sure.
All KLOS guys.
Yeah, of course.
They're all. So it made me feel a little better going down there because sometimes when I go, I feel like I'm at a party that I was not invited to.
Right.
Monday's a good night because you see some of the faces.
Yeah.
And Frazier's there and people that you might know. And
I should talk to Adam about it because I was looking for something to do on Monday night the other night. And there's
nothing to
do.
Well, you don't have to talk to Adam about it. You just go.
Yeah.
And put your name in the thing.
Oh, okay.
I mean, but if you know Adam, he can do whatever he wants.
Right.
And do wondrous and glorious things for you.
I don't know Adam. Okay, I email Adam. There's a difference.
I hear he's a very nice guy.
Yeah.
I don't envy his job. And I don't want to be the guy who's going to run up and you know, yet another. If the time comes and I want to pull a string with Jimmy Schubert or Chappelle or right, somebody. Right. But I'd really rather just re-showcase for him and
yeah.
let it be what it'll be. Be honest yeah, yeah. with you. Because it's uncomfortable to ask for a favor anyways.
Oh, sure.
And you know, if he showcases you and he actually likes you, maybe there'll be some staying power.
As yeah, opposed exactly.
to, you know, I mean, I just feel like if it's like, oh, yeah, so-and-so, Schubert got in my ear, is this not the same as, oh, I saw him.
Right, absolutely.
Fairly reasonably funny.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, they don't necessarily need a gray-haired, sarcastic Jewish guy. I'm not in a category that's in demand.
Right.
But there's still room there. There is still room. I know LeBeau showcased recently.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah. Eleanor was telling me, and you know, Eleanor's real tight in there.
Eleanor Kerrigan, who's yeah. been on the show, and Carl LeBeau, who's been on the show.
And
who's so funny.
It's hilarious.
He's so funny.
Well, LeBeau's another level, and Eleanor's another level. I mean, you can't...
I remember Eleanor when she was a waitress at the Comedy Store, and I was just starting out.
Yeah.
And to go from that to
she's
where
a force.
She's hilarious she's now, hilarious. Man. Because I remember when she first started, I was like,
well, of course.
We all were.
Me too.
We all were.
Should have yeah. seen me.
I still yeah. am, but let's be honest.
Yeah, but she was high profile because she was starting at a club.
Where yeah, and she was dating Dice, and Dice was taking her out. And mm-hmm. then, but man, I hadn't seen her in a while, and then I saw her at the All Things Comedy Festival last year, and I was like, oh, shit.
She crushes it.
She kills,
yeah,
man.
She takes the stage
yeah.
not like she used to take the stage.
yeah, but, yeah.
And she really does. And not only that, she's kind of the mommy over there. She's kind of the mother figure.
Yeah.
Because
she's been
was
there
close
forever.
Mitzi.
She was
there since 93, she told me the other night.
Wow.
1993. Okay, way before my ass was there.
Yeah, totally.
But she
yeah.
is... Like, she's the one when I went there and she saw me like a month ago standing around feeling uncomfortable. She said, come here. So she put her arm around me. And this is why I love Eleanor and why I love comics sometimes, because they can see how you're feeling without you saying anything.
Right.
And she went up to every door guy and said, this is Randy Kagan. His name's on the wall. Very mm-hmm. nice and very polite. But that from then on, I never had to feel like I had to break into the Comedy Store
right.
just to hang out.
Right.
Because Eleanor sort of anointed me. Just trust me on this. This guy's on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
He's cool. She didn't say, hey, put him up.
Right.
She just said, leave him alone and quit asking him to get out of the way.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
It's just, right.
But I did learn one thing. Because I'm a humble person, and I'm sure we all are. The last thing I was going to say when I got to the store was, the Comedy Store was, my name's on the wall, excuse me?
Right, right.
But that is the first thing you need to say, because there's still something reverential about to the kids.
Mm-hmm.
They take their headsets off and go, I am sorry. Nice to meet you.
Right.
And that is never a problem again. It's literally that simple.
Wow, yeah. That's cool.
And I was shocked because I thought they'd be like, okay, Grandpa, great story.
Right.
Here's the new world
yeah.
order.
Yeah,
okay,
exactly.
But no, it was like, oh, my God. And they literally shake your hand with that, I'm hoping to have my name on there added. Completely changes.
Right.
Sure.
Excuse me, sir. What are you doing over there? Hey, my name's Randy. It's really nice to meet you. I'm on the wall. Oh, I am so sorry to bother you. Oh, my God. What's your name? It's that. So just do that.
Right. What is the criteria to be on the wall?
I was passed by Mitzi.
Just yeah. by being passed?
I don't know.
I don't know what it is now.
I don't know what it is
Mitzi.
Now. Right. I know at the time I was never told.
Right.
As a matter of fact, I found out much later that my name was on the wall. There's no fanfare.
Mm-hmm.
Nor at the time did I think it was a big deal. Now I do.
Right.
As
yeah.
time goes on, I'm super proud of the fact that Mitzi grabbed my arm and made me a regular
mm-hmm.
that next night. I'm super proud of it. I'm as proud as I could be of anything.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
I know there's a lot of crazy Mitzi stories, but
sure.
all she ever said to me was, you know, very sweet things very, very briefly. And then I stayed out of her way. I just,
mm-hmm.
I was so enamored by her. I really was. And Eleanor was always next to her because she wasn't walking great back
right.
then.
Yeah.
This wasn't so long ago that she was vibrant and stupping Argus
right.
and whatever Leno saw and everything from those pictures. I did not get to experience, but I experienced a frail woman who still seemed to understand and care about whatever her vision was.
Yeah.
And I always thought crazy seemed better than corporate to me. And that's what I would say about the store, because I'm an improv boy. I grew up at the improv. I breastfed at the improv. All of them, I was an improv guy until I had an altercation, not the one we talked
sure.
about, but of course another one,
right.
a physical altercation. I find myself at the Comedy Store. Jimmy Schubert asked Mitzi to look at me, and that day, for 2 years straight before Tommy came in, I was a Comedy Store regular, and that was, I didn't know where to go.
Sure.
I was an orphan.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'd been brought up, and I'd been told that the Comedy Store was a seedy piece of crap.
Mm-hmm.
And
but it was at
and,
the time.
And it still is,
mm-hmm.
but they never told me that it was also infested with the past and with an an urgency to be good, and Richard Pryor walked the halls, and Dave Chappelle is still there for a reason.
Yeah.
And it's not because the ashtrays are clean or the chairs are new. Nothing's
right.
new.
Right.
But the vibe there, the past, the reverence that it has, I'm so proud that these millennial punk-ass bitches still have reverence for something that was not on YouTube or isn't in a video game. I'm super, super proud of still being part of the Comedy Store.
That's great.
Because nice. I do think they are also part of the new frontier.
Sure.
That's where the kids are going. But the kids are also understanding what built that place.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was not just rich folks, but people there late at night, 1:30 in the morning, working on stuff. Meaning not just successful comics.
Right.
But a foundation on just effort.
He pointed at me when he said that.
No, I didn't. I gestured.
That's a point.
But you know when you point, when you point, it's a very good point about my pointing. I will say that. But you do know when you point your finger at somebody else, you're really trying to point the other three at them as well. So
are you going to
I'm messing up. It was a saying that Gary understood.
Are you going to nanu nanu me there first?
I know,
thought
I'm
it was
sorry.
Robin Williams.
They said the best thing you should do on a podcast is visuals.
Yeah. Murray might not know what that one thing.
There's a saying.
Is there a sports saying?
One, not sports.
Oh.
For every one finger you're pointing at someone else, there's three pointing back at you.
Back at yourself. Yeah, but yeah. I changed it because I'll do that sometimes to confuse and bewilder people.
Oh.
So I changed
success.
It. Exactly. C-U-C-K-S. Yes, I have put the suck in success.
Yeah, so.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That's what I'm here for.
Randy, I want to thank you for coming
it's
out today.
It's my pleasure.
Man. What a blast.
Yeah,
I'm glad
fun.
We could work
Feeling
this out.
Feeling is mutual. You guys are delightful. And tell your friends about this podcast because it's the real deal, people.
Listen, I'm leaving town tomorrow. And
travel safe.
You really worked with me to do this, to get it in.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah.
So when you guys hear this, I'll be in London.
Hello.
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 I'm doing a set on Friday night in London.
I think that sounds exciting. I love London. It's a
never
been
done
to London?
Sets. I have, but I never done sets, so I'm a little stressed. I was telling Gary.
Yeah. Don't be.
Yeah.
No, don't.
I've done to other countries, but it's always been expats or military.
I would be very excited if I were you, because I think London's wonderful. And you know how Bill Hicks and a lot of people go there and find a place. Hendrix.
Sure.
And I pointed at you for that.
Yes, you did.
And I pointed at you for Hicks.
Yeah, but three other fingers were pointing back at you.
It's just a form of narcissism. It really is. But I really think you should be excited, because you never know. You could click over there and you can see somebody and get a whole new bucket of interest. So,
right.
London has done that for folks. So if I were you, I'd be super excited. I've never done a set in London.
If I was going to give you advice, I would give you almost the same advice I got when I was in Charlie Goodnight's, and was it
Raleigh?
Raleigh, yeah.
I think, yeah, I've heard
and
of
Raleigh,
it. It's been
Raleigh, yes, exactly. And I was there for the week, but one of the nights was going to be Urban Night.
Mm-hmm.
And Urban Comedy, and
that's
but they were still going to have
night.
Me.
Right.
They were still having me. I was like, "Oh, okay." And I was very nervous going over my set, how to do it like this. And then when I got there, one of the other comics said, just do what you do. Just do it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try to cater it to them or change things, references and stuff that you think other people are, you know, that you're trying to fix it.
Yeah, sort of.
He says, let them figure it out
right.
and see if they like you. He says, they're going to let you know. So that's how I think I would really give you that advice
from Gary.
Yeah.
Dance with the girl that brung you. Why second guess anything?
Yeah, that's true.
Do all the stuff, wear the shoes that make you feel comfortable
and
do the stuff and be you.
Yep.
Be you. Because I'm telling you, that's people know now. They're very hip to generations of comedy now. They know when you're in the moment and they know when you're presenting something.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
You might think they like. They're savvy.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So
I agree 100%.
I'll tell Gary's advice.
All right. So, Randy, where can we find you?
You could find me on Facebook. I'm there all the time.
Okay.
Randy Kagan, K-A-G-A-N. I tweet. I'm also on Instagram. I'm also on the Fraser Smith Show every Sunday. KLOS. I'm also in the San Luis Obispo Comedy Festival coming up, which I'm excited to be there with Gene Pompa.
SLO Festival,
Brody Slow.
Right?
Very
slow.
Slow.
Yeah,
we get a yellow bus. We go up there.
Oh, wow.
Right to the end. You had to do it. But and there you go. I'll be in the ether. So.
All right. Who else is on besides Brody and who else?
It's Brody, and I think Don Barris is there, and Gene Pompa is there.
Ah, yes, Gene.
And I'm really excited to see Gene because I haven't seen him since he became Hispanic. So I'm very excited. When I knew him, he was kind of murky.
Right,
but now
sure.
He's full on Cholitos. So I'm looking forward to seeing him. And I think it's a tax write-off now. I plan on building a wall around Gene Pompa.
I spent Gene Pompa's birthday at the Vegas Improv with him one night, and we stayed out drinking till 4.
Well, that to me, I love the Gene Pompa.
Oh, me too. I had a blast, but I was just, I'm not. Ever since I had a kid, I'm not the up late drinking guy anymore.
And Gene Pompa still is.
Oh, yeah. And I remember just being out at like
on the strip at 4 a.m. with a half a, you know, huge solo cup full of just straight vodka. And I remember just when he didn't look, I poured it out over my shoulder. I'm like, well, I'm done.
That's awesome.
I went to bed.
That's awesome. Wow. We wonder, how did he pass that sobriety test so easily? And he walked such a straight line.
Gary Brightwell, where can we see you? You going out with Regan? You just did four
dates
with
Brian.
Brian.
So I got nothing really coming up with him.
Okay.
But, I got a couple things. Pump Springs I'm doing. Okay. Nice. Johnston gig. And
are you doing the Pump Springs Improv?
No.
Oh, all right.
No. Just a... country clubs, some okay, country cool. clubs and stuff that sounds like guy books. So yeah, they're actually really good.
Like a little vacation.
Did you say the Lorenzo ones?
Those? They're very similar to those.
Oh, okay. I've done those. Those are fantastic.
Comedian Denny Johnston.
I don't know Denny, but of course he's infamous.
Sure.
He has these gigs out there and they're great.
That's awesome.
He treats you nice and it's great.
Excellent.
He's
that's
a good guy.
So that's really all I want anymore is just
amen.
To be treated nice.
Amen.
Yes. Exactly. That's
everywhere.
All we want.
Especially by our peers at this point, for sure. Especially in our generation, just be kindness. Just bring a little love. Keep it scathing for the stage.
Yes,
that's for the stage.
Absolutely. Hey guys, thanks for listening. I really appreciate it. At Murray V on Twitter, Murray V Comedy on Instagram, Murray Valeriano Comedy on Facebook. I don't have a. Things have been shut down this February just because everything's happening for my wife. So thanks for the kind words on that. I really appreciate it. And if you want to follow me in London, hit me on Instagram or Twitter or the Oscars, Instagram and Twitter. I'll be live tweeting and Instagramming from that. That'd be awesome. And hey, come see these guys when you're coming to your town. They're very funny. Thanks, guys.
Yep.
My pleasure.
You want to know about life on the road? It's booze, tacos, angry dwarfs, strippers waving guns,
and
bees, fights, canceled flights, running with the runs,
and
blacklists, bounce checks, great, a bachelorette, drunks in the front, making out through your set,
and
middle acts doing blow more, missing merch,
and
drive the rental car past another mega church,
and
juice, keys, vagina, fist, your cell phone is gone, one big Law and Order marathon.